the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering, of course, your Arizona Cardinals in episode 651. Joining me for our second of our draft preview shows is co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, we even get a little bonus news today, don't we? We are going to talk about defensive tackles in this draft, but thanks to some Tuesday news that we were not expecting, the Cardinals added a defensive lineman, a guy that I'm shocked by the news for a number of reasons. But tell us what happened on Tuesday, Seth.
Yeah, man, I mean, we're just sitting here hanging out having a conversation, and they drop that and by the way, doing it on April Fool's Day, right? Like,
I didn't even think about that.
Thank God it was an actual professional release and not just something that somebody posted on X, because that would have been a nightmare to deal with. But yeah, I mean, the team has re-signed veteran, and that's putting it mildly, defensive lineman Calais Campbell to a one-year, $5.5 million deal, worth up to $7.5 million with incentive. The number one run-stop defender in the NFL last year per PFF, it goes to the Cardinals. It's just one of those.
It's wild.
It is. It's wild that it happened. It's wild that it took that long, you know. And so we'll see how it goes and where that goes. But
what it certainly does is make the defense, the competition for the defensive line room, very interesting, especially if they end up drafting us. As it is, you have seven guys that you could put on the 53-man roster right now and feel honestly really good about. What's crazy with Calais is it's been 8 years. 8 years. He spent 9 years with the Cardinals. That's like an entire career. And he's had himself an entire second career over the last 8 years. And now he comes back. And last year at age 38, my goodness, he's going to be 39 by the time the season starts. And he had 52 tackles. He had 5 sacks, 12 tackles for loss, 12 quarterback hits. It's not the 2 years that he had, his first 2 years in Jacksonville after he signed, leaving the Cardinals in free agency, when he had 14.5 sacks and 10.5 sacks. And they basically, what the Cardinals used him as a 3-4 end, so he was an interior guy. When they bumped him out to the edge in a 4-3 scheme, and he proved to be a top pass rusher, one of the best in the NFL for a couple of years. And now he's gotten back to at age 38, like he's had 3 straight years at age 36, 37, and 38, where he's had at least 5 sacks a year. And let's not forget that the Cardinals sack leader of the team had 5 sacks last year. But like the seven they have in that defensive line room right now, you've got Calais Campbell, you've got Dalvin Tomlinson, you've got Justin Jones, you've got Bilal Nichols, you've got LJ Collier, Dante Stills, and you've also got last year's first-round pick in Darius Robinson. If you draft anyone, and that's going to really make it the top of the draft interesting, because if you add anything to that group, you know what almost feels like is going to happen? Someone's getting traded. Like Dante Stills might get traded. Like, I don't know what value Bilal Nichols has in the trade market, but I think we are quickly going to look at a scenario where we might see a guy like Dante Stills traded entering year three of his career, simply because they don't have room for him because they have stocked up that room.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, really what it's about at this point, right? Like, you kind of look at it and it gives you two questions. One, how much are they looking at this going, okay, we need to address the defensive line in the first round, or two, now looking at it and go, you know what, if this guy's the best player on our board when we pick at 16, we'll take him. But if not, who cares, right? Like, we've got a much improved defensive line room. The other thing this does is it doesn't necessarily change anything, because you're talking about a, you know, near 40-year-old, right? Like,
right.
Like, so he's a guy that you're counting on for 2025, but it just means that you don't need any of these guys to be an impact in 2025 if you draft them. And quite frankly, that's something you and I have talked about ad nauseum on this podcast when it comes to defensive line types, right? Like, you look at the play of interior defensive linemen drafted in round one, and it's not saying that that can't happen. It's just very rare that a guy that's drafted in round one puts up a season where you're like, oh yeah, this guy's really, really good. And you know, we can go back to Jalen Carter. Jalen Carter is now thought of very highly. You know, he's all pro second team, made a Pro Bowl. He barely cleared 50% of the snaps as a rookie, right? 50%.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. He has played over 500 snaps every year since turning 35.
And that's 50% of the snaps. So, like, that's what you're looking at with this guy. And again, it's not to say that they've answered the question, right? Like, they don't need an interior, or they don't need any help along the defensive line. It makes it not as urgent to draft one in the first round, but it also makes it not as urgent for that guy to be an impact player from day one. And it's just ironic, Jess, because you and I, you know, had this planned out last week, that we're talking about the interior defensive line on the day that they sign a veteran defensive lineman to a one-year contract.
Yes. Yeah, so with that, let's go ahead and start things off. Coming up next on the Rise of Fury podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web, we're going to dive into the draft class. We're going to talk defensive tackles. We'll start with day one. That's coming up next on Rise of Fury. We're back on the Rise of Fury podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're going to talk day one, or potential day one. There are a few guys that feel like are day one locks in the draft. And it's interesting because, Seth, isn't it the case where really there's only truly one day one lock, and that's probably top five, and then the rest of the potential round one guys, there's a high variance between middle of the first and like middle of the second, isn't there?
Yeah, and this is a class where, you said it, Jess, there's a guy, like there's a dude, and he's the dude in this class, and he is elite. He's, you know, in the draft rankings that Jess and I use, the consensus big board, he is the number five overall prospect in the draft. So you look at it, he is, we'll say, a top 10 lock, just because there's just so much uncertainty in this class. But he's a top five player in this draft on the consensus board. He's very highly thought of, and that's Mason Graham, the defensive lineman out of Michigan. You know, the thing with Graham is, first off, you know, he's a guy that has had insane production for two straight years, both as a run defender and against the pass. And then you look at just the metrics, you look at the size, you know, he comes in and he's got a little bit shorter arms than you would like. And that's the knock, right? Like, that's what people take away from it. They're like, oh, well, he has short arms. It's like, yeah, when you're 6'3" and 296 pounds and you move like this, I don't care. You're like, I just don't care. This is a guy that has elite on-field ability and has shown it the last 2 years. He's been the best defensive lineman in the country. He, you know, is incredible all along the line. He's lined up. He doesn't line up too much in the A gap, and he doesn't line up out wide too much, but you know, he'll line up over the tackles. He'll line up inside shade of the tackles. He'll line up over the guards. That's, and he can win from anywhere. He's going to be a top 10 pick. If there was a guy that the Cardinals traded up for in this draft, that's the guy I would trade up for in this draft. I think he's potentially the best player in this draft, in a draft with, you know, elite talent like Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter. Mason Graham might be the guy that has the, you know, most decorated career of that bunch.
Do you think that Graham's a guy? Because statistically, like production wise, the numbers aren't eye popping. 9 career sacks, 18 tackles for loss. Is he the type of guy that's going to end up putting up bigger numbers as a pro than in college?
Definitely. And he's a guy that, you know, steadily improved year by year, as we've always talked about, right? One of those things that is important. But he was also the focal point of every defense that he went up against. And remember, he's playing with another first round pick, a guy that is going to be a potential first round pick, likely first round pick. And he's just so explosive, so powerful. You know, there's a lot of names that get thrown around, you know, with guys like this, but the reality is there's very few players that have the style of play that he does. But you know, I've said this before, and I hate, you know, always talking about guys that are all pros and things of that nature. You know, a guy that is really, really talented, but a guy like Tommy Harris, I don't know if you remember that name, from the early 2000s, out of Oklahoma. He had a really, really nice career, you know, ended up playing really well. That's the type of player we're talking about, a guy that just got signed to a big contract, that's had a really nice start to his career, is kind of like the low end of it. And that's Levi Onwuzurike, the kid out of Washington that's been with the Lions. Like, so that's what we're talking about with Mason Graham. It's just a guy that feels not just safe, but he's got like high end potential. And then like his floor is what Onwuzurike got a pretty good money, is if I'm remembering right. Right. So I don't know. Like, this is just a nice, like, he's the guy I think is probably the best player, or maybe the safest is the right word, but also could be the best player in this draft. And that's the thing. This is a talented defensive line group. It's just that, you know, there's Mason Graham, and then there's a glut of really talented guys after
that. We're going to go by kind of the talk of mock drafts. Now, there are a few guys who could be first rounders, but I want to group these three because they're the ones that consistently are towards the middle of the first round, although there are projections that they go as low as the second round. But if you had to rank these guys in terms of talent, you've got Walter Nolan, Ole Miss. You've got Derek Harmon, Oregon, and you've got Kenneth Grant, the other defensive tackle at Michigan. If you were to rank those three, and the Cardinals in mock drafts have been linked to all three in terms of the 16th pick. I know there's a couple other first round potential day one guys, but if you're looking at these three, how do you stack them up?
It's so tough because they play such different ways. I'm a big, big fan of Derek Harmon. I think he is a guy that has improved over the years at Michigan, started at Michigan State, and then got better and better. And then, you know, went to Oregon this year and became, you know, one of the best players, best defensive line types in the country. I'm not going to go as far as saying he could be Chris Jones, because that's an unfair comparison, but he has similar size athleticism to Chris Jones and what we saw from Chris Jones when he was coming out of Mississippi State. And again, Jones is another guy that you look at and has produced way more in the NFL. You know, you mentioned Graham. Jones had 8.5 sacks in 3 seasons at Mississippi State. Harmon had 8.5 sacks in basically 3 seasons because he didn't play much as a freshman while in college. So, you know, a guy that people will go, well, you know, he doesn't have that elite production, but the way he moves, the size, the length, like he's a guy that I would love. And I know people have said like, oh, 16 is too rich for him, but I disagree, man. 6'4.5", 313, had those good splits. You know, that size is undeniable.
Yeah, you've got a 4.95 40 plus, like that. What we've talked about on this show for years is when you're getting an interior defender, like a defensive lineman in the first round, especially if the middle of the first round and up, the one thing that they have to have, they have to be a three down player. They have to be a guy who can get, who have pass rushing juice. You know that Harmon has that because you saw the production increase, and more specifically last year there was the disruption, 5 sacks, 11 tackles for loss. In fact, those two totals in his first year with Oregon exceeded what he had done in 3 previous seasons. And so you can see the explosiveness and the pass rushing juice that he's got.
Yeah, and some comparisons I've seen, again, don't want to go too far, but I've seen Leonard Williams, who, you know, has wreaked havoc over the Cardinals. One I really like, you know, again, I don't want to go as far as Chris Jones, because that's, you know, that is the elite of the elite, borderline Hall of Fame level type player. But like a Christian Barmore out of New England, who was coming into his own before an injury, you know, cut short this season. But, you know, he was a guy that had 8.5 sacks in 2023, you know, and was an elite producer. Got those guys are guys that I could see him being like, I love Harmon's ability. I just love the player. Next would be Kenneth Grant. I think the Cardinals just kind of signed Kenneth Grant, and I'm okay with that. Dalvin Tomlinson is kind of the comp for me. I think he is, you know, he's a little bit bigger. Again, you want to go super, super high end, and this is just quite frankly unlikely because there's very few people that ever have had this type of impact on the game. But, oh gosh, the name's escaping me now. Who's the big dude from New England for all those years? And then went to Houston. Vince Wilfork.
That's the one.
Right. Like, and again, that is unlikely, just reality, right? Vince Wilfork is a unicorn of unicorns. But, you know, you can see the flashes of that. You can see the talent. What I'm saying that is you're not going to get a guy that's 6'3 and 330 pounds that probably plays for 13 years in the NFL. Just most guys don't play for 13 years at all. So for him, you know, to play that long was just so impressive. Again, that's the top. But what if you get a guy like Eddie Goldman, right? Like, do you remember Eddie Goldman out of Florida Yes. State and still around the league, been around for a decade now? You know, never.
He went middle of the first to the Bears, didn't he?
Top of the second to the Bears. Yes.
Top of the second. Yeah. I remember what we went one of our well, long, long ago, we talked about him as a guy that people were thinking could go in the middle of the first. But the conversation we had is he's more of a two down run stuffer.
Right. And so that's what that's what it is about, that you have to decide on Kenneth Grant. You know, you look at the way he was used at Michigan, right? And you know, PFF does a great job. I just, you know, shout out to PFF, but they lined him up in the A gap 170 times last season. But they lined him up in the B gap, so more as like a three technique, right? Like, so not necessarily as the nose tackle, 368 times. And you know, it coincided with his best season. He's a guy that, again, the question becomes, how many snaps are you going to get out of this guy? That's genuinely just like the concern, I would think. But he is he's a mountain of a man. He has elite traits. He's an elite mover for the size. I know that his times weren't as great as everybody wanted coming out of the Michigan Pro Day. But I don't care. When your film shows that you can move, I don't care. The one thing I'll say is this. The guys we mentioned, you know, Eddie Goldman, Vince Wilfork, those guys, the thing that like separates a guy like Vince Wilfork from everybody else that has been that size and played for so long is his ability to play strong and to really anchor. It's not about, and I know there's all those fantastic clips of Vince Wilfork's interceptions and him making tackles in the backfield, and that's great. The question I have with Grant is, you know, I'm not a huge bench press guy, but like 22 reps at his size, was he injured? Was he just not, you know, in shape for it? It's not a huge deal to me. It's genuinely not, but, you know, it's one thing that's like, is he going to be strong enough to fold into nose consistently and be a guy that can hold up there? That's the one question I have. But you know, I have no hesitation with him. Either at, you know, in the first round, I know people would say, well, you know, he's kind of a two down guy. He is, but I think he does have some pass rush upside. And so we'll see how that works out. And then you mentioned Walter Nolan. He's kind of the wild card of the group. Because here's the thing. Nolan is an enigma. You're talking about the number two player in the 22 class. So, you know, all of the traits coming out went to Texas A&M. I know that situation with Jimbo was kind of a dumpster fire at the end. So again, it's really difficult to fault a kid for all the stuff that went down. But then you have to ask yourself, you know, where was the production, or where was kind of any production, right, while he was at Texas A&M? And then why did it
take Texas A&M? Texas A&M. That we had the question, because you've got Nick Scowerton and you've got Shamar Stewart, who have a lack of production. Apparently, they don't feature or showcase their best front seven guys.
Yeah,
is that just what happens? That's weird.
Yeah, it just seems like it. It seems like consistently, right? That's an issue. And so you look at it and you kind of just, you know, you go with it. But he's a guy that I think can do a good job, you know, and again, four sacks as a sophomore, and then this year, 6.5 sacks, All-American. Probably the, you know, most impressive guy this year in terms of play. The question becomes, how long does it get? He's the guy that I look at and I go, man, I really like him, but is it going to be 3 years until he produces? And so going back to our conversation, right? Like, have they set themselves up where they can deal with that? You know, year one is very low snap count. Year two, you know, he flashes 3.5-4 sacks. And then year three, you know, he's the guy. And all of a sudden he's putting up 6, 8, 9 sacks from the interior, and he's one of those guys. And so that's the question with him, because I mean, the game this year was, I mean, dare we say elite, just like, and we don't like to throw that word around, right? But like, what he did this year was elite. So now how does he back it up?
So for me, if we're talking like across the board and not projecting much. So I think for me, Kenneth Grant, I feel much more comfortable if he's a trade back candidate or if he's around round two, simply because value wise, if he's a if he's a solid two down player, good. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think the pass rushing upside that you get from both Nolan and Harmon, I think make them really good candidates for the Cardinals at 16, if that's the way they want to go. Grant, if he's in the second round, 100%, because then you don't care. If he's a second round pack, you don't care if he gets sacks. You don't care if he disrupts. Like, if he's a really, like, an elite run-stopping interior guy, if you get that in round two, you'll take that every day of the week. While in round one, you like it, okay. Think back to when the Cardinals drafted Dan Williams. People liked that, but...
And that's, Dan, I mean,
wasn't anything to be excited about over his career.
Also a bad comparison, like to look at him and say, oh, he could be the next Dan Williams. And that's, you're exactly right, Jess. Like, people are gonna be like, oh, that's a terrible pick. It's like, it's not a terrible pick.
It was a fine pick. It's just because he was good at what he did.
It's just not sexy. And so that's the thing is, like, again, I go back to it. I don't mind, like, if they went Kenneth Grant, I wouldn't care. Like, I think it would be a good fit. I think he would, you know, I think he would work out. I think all of that would be great. But, you know, I also think you'd get a lot of similarities to Dan Williams, where you're like maybe a little underwhelmed and you're not seeing his playing time for the first 2 years because they just signed Dalvin Tomlinson and they've got, you know, these other guys. And by the way, Jess, we're not just saying that about Kenneth Grant. We're literally saying that about any of these guys, because that's kind of what we've intimated, is that they've put themselves in a position where they don't have to go and go, all right, we have to get a defensive tackle and hope he can produce in year one. It's like, hey, if the best player on the board and on our board is, you know, Walter Nolan, we can draft him. Or, you know, Kenneth Grant or Derek Harmon or whoever. We can draft that guy and we feel really good about it. But we don't have to, because the next guys we're going to talk about, two that are actually maybe even three that are borderline first rounders, and then just a plethora of guys that I really like, that's what makes this group so intriguing.
Yeah. Tell us about the two that are fringe day one guys, and then we'll start the next segment with day two.
Yeah, so the first one's Tyleek Williams, the defensive tackle out of Ohio State, who gave everybody a scare at his pro day, right? Pulled up lame, had to be helped off. Everybody's like, oh no. And this dude is a specimen. Just under 6'3", 6'2", and 7'8". So we can call him 6'3". But he came in at 334 pounds. He is just built like a freight train. And he plays like it, man. Like, he is a legit interior force. And the way he plays, it's just, he's fun to watch. He's talented. He's like... him and the next couple guys are why I'm not like, hey, you have to draft a guy on day one. Because after Mason Graham, while I love Derek Harmon, while I really like Kenneth Grant and Walter Nolan, I'm not like, oh my gosh, if they don't end up with him, they're in trouble. Because of guys like Tyleek Williams, you know, Williams is a guy that reminds me of a guy like Daron Payne. You know, coming out of and remember, Daron Payne went in the first round, right, to the Commander Skins or whatever they were back in that period of time. And we've seen a lot of guys, you know, Daron Payne, Malik Collins, you know, guy I love coming out, Alan McNeil, all those guys are kind of on that same tier as Tyleek Williams, and they've all had really, really nice careers. And so that's why I look at this class and I think, oh, it's really, you know, kind of your flavor, and what you prefer. The next guy is an interesting one, man, because he's a small school guy, but he put up, he's just been absolutely killing the process. And that's Darius Alexander out of Toledo, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I get all those ones mixed up. Toledo, Tulane, Tulsa, they all run together for me. But yeah, Darius Alexander out of Toledo, you know, he's interesting. Came in just a shade under 6'4", 305, but vines for arms, one of the longer wingspans and arm length. And then he put up a sub 5 second 40, with good jumps. The biggest question on him is he didn't run those shuttles very well. Didn't run them as well as you would have hoped.
They didn't match the elite numbers for his other stuff, essentially.
Correct.
Because it was 7.63 cone, 4.79 short shuttle, which when you compare the 4.95 40 and the 31.5-inch vert at 300 pounds, you're like, oh, that doesn't match.
But he's an explosive guy, and it showed with the 100 and the jumps, right? His broad jump and vertical were vertical 76th percentile, broad was 82nd percentile. And so like those numbers, and then that 10-yard split in the 72nd. So like he's an explosive upfield short area guy, and it makes sense. I've seen some Kawan Short comparisons. I don't know if you remember Short when he was with Carolina. Again, same type of thing, right? Drafted on day two in that 44 to 47 range. He went 44 and had a really nice career. But again, what did he do, Jess? He started slow in his career, right? He started slow, and then he just took off, and he had that 3-year stretch where he went 11, 6, and 7.5. And obviously I'm not going to ever call a shot where I'm going to be like, yeah, Darius Alexander is going to put up 11 sacks in a season 1 year, right? Like that's a wild suggestion, but he does have that type of ability, and that straight line explosiveness that you really like. He's going to be interesting to watch kind of to finish up here, because he's a guy I really like, and I'm going to be interested to see where he ends up going.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's dive into who are some of the day two guys to know. That's coming up next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the Web, talking defensive tackles for the NFL draft in 2025. We talked some first round guys, some fringe first round guys. Who are guys on day two that we ought to know? Especially considering this class is deep, and it would feel like, I think I'm personally leaning towards, they're not going to take a D tackle at number 16, based on what they have on the roster, unless they just absolutely love a guy. Right. And maybe if they trade back, but I'm starting to sniff offensive line. I think that's what I'm starting to sniff offensive line coming for the first round. And so, but this is a deep D tackle draft, and it would seem like, oh, like with this class, wouldn't it feel like a waste to come away with none?
Oh, 100%. And this is a class that's going to end up showing you a lot. And, you know, we start on day two with a guy that, one of my good buddies, Coximus, talks about all the time. I can't get him to stop texting me about him, and it's Alfred Collins, the little guy, right, out of Texas, 6'6", 332 pounds, vines for arms, can't jump, but I mean, when you're 6'6", 330, do you care? Like, genuinely, are you like, I need you to show me that you can? No, just hold two guys up there. The comps on this one come out easy, man. I mean, A'shaun Robinson, same type of size, length, build, right? Not a explosive athlete by any means coming out of Alabama, and so you're okay with that, and all A'shaun's done, yeah, he hasn't been a guy that is, you know, a Pro Bowler or anything like that, but it's very unrealistic to have, you know, 11 Pro Bowlers along the defensive line and things like that. He's part of good defensive lines in Detroit, and then obviously Super Bowl winner in LA. And then he's kind of fluttered around the last couple of years in New York, Carolina. And all he's done is continue to have a solid career. I really like Alfred Collins. I think he's a good fit for what they need and what they want to do.
Batted down 7 passes last year as well. So he's got that going for him as well. Batted down past the line of scrimmage. When an offense thinks they get the pass off and then it gets batted at the line of scrimmage, that's demoralizing. That's demoralizing. So that's an extra something as well. He's not, you know, he had 7 career sacks in 5 years, 18 tackles for loss.
But that's definitely not his game, right?
Right. He's going to stuff the middle. He's going to knock down a few passes. And where do you see him going? Is he more round 2 or round 3?
I think he's round 2, but I've heard like crazy. And again, I'm not saying I would agree with this, but I've heard rumors that he could be like top of round 2, end of round 1, which I don't see that type of player. But again, if you think you can get a guy that can play 70% of the snaps and give you consistent effort along that line, then that's not a bad pick. I mean, I know people, again, aren't going to be bowled over by A'shaun Robinson, but if he has an A'shaun Robinson like her, that's a fantastic pick. Because you're talking about a guy that you can just count on every season to be really, really solid. Then after that, it kind of gets into like, what's your flavor, Jess? Like, what are you looking for? We can go to TJ Sanders, the interior defensive lineman from South Carolina. A little bit, I think this is the first, outside of Graham, the first sub 300 guy we've talked about, right? 6'4", 297. So just under, not anything crazy. Had really nice jumps. Didn't run, so that's okay. We don't really care about that, but had good explosiveness on the jumps. And he shows the ability to get sacks. 5 of in each of his last 2 seasons playing for South Carolina. He's one of the guys that I look at though, and I go, okay, this dude is like, he's been held. And I don't mean this in a negative way, so I don't want this to come across. He's been held down on a snap count, right? Like he's been kept at bay, basically, because you look at his snap counts, you know, 479, then 468 last year. So it's not a guy that's going to be, you know, playing every down. And that's what the questions are overall. From there, you know, you look at him, he's a guy that's probably going to go late round 2, early round 3. I always get that mixed up. It'd be nice if they separated out so I could just do that easier. Late round 2, early round 3. But then again, you get the next guy, right? Omar Norman Lott, another big body, a guy that has had success.
Was at Arizona State. Like Arizona State under Herm Edwards had themselves some nice talent, and Herm Edwards did absolutely nothing with it.
Herm. Right.
Yeah. Continue on.
No. Yeah. Jess gets his ASU rant in for the day. But again, you look at him, he's not, quite frankly, I don't know if Norman Lott fits with this defense, but you look at him, just under 6'2", 290 pounds, but he's got really long arms, really, really big hands, and he's athletic as hell, like just athletic. I've seen some guys that really like him that talk about him as, you know, being a guy like a Kenny Clark coming out of UCLA that I think had, I think, did Clark go in the first round with the Packers back in the day?
I believe so. He was a late first rounder, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and yes, you're correct. And it's been to 3 Pro Bowls, and I'm just like, that's a little too rich for me. You know, I don't think he can be, but you know, I more see a guy that had a good career, that played well, that, you know, was that I think he's actually still playing, but, you know, like an Adam Gostis type of guy, right? That started out as a defensive end and didn't really work out. And so they folded him down into a, that's kind of where I'm at with Norman Lott. I genuinely don't know if he fits what the Cardinals have done. Not saying that they won't do, but what they have done thus far. Then we get into the other big guy. And quite frankly, just, this is just me, no inside information, just for me. Deion Walker wouldn't even be on my board. If you can get him in day three, I'm fine with that. But Deion Walker, 6'7", 330 plus pounds.
And 34 and a quarter inch arms. So long.
And a bad back.
So
that's my biggest thing with him. Love the game. Love what I've seen. Not
7.5 sacks and 13 tackles for loss in the SEC for Kentucky in 2023. But only 1.5 sacks and 5 tackles for loss last year in 11 games. But if you're saying he had the back issues, it doesn't look like he missed a ton of time. But it definitely bothered him last year, didn't it?
Right, and he was diagnosed with I think it's called a pars fracture, which means he has fractures in his lower back. So like a pars defect, that's what it's called. Sorry. So like, there's not a question of if he has a bad back. He has a bad back. So like, that's why I'd just be like, I'm out. Like, nothing negative to say about the player. Just I wouldn't mess with it. Again, we go, you know, we hit this Texas A&M thing for the fourth time in two shows. But we
Shamar Turner.
Yeah, we get to Shamar Turner, man, and another guy that I don't mind. A little undersized, but if they like him as like a five tech guy that can play kind of defensive end and fold down, kind of similar to Darius, right? 6'3", just over 6'3", but 290 pounds. I don't mind it, but I'm not looking at him and going, oh, this is the guy, right? Like, he's active, he's a hard worker. They used him a lot as kind of that 4-3 technique. Four technique or three technique, like inside shade of the tackle, outside shade of the guard. He's a guy that's going to have a long career, like no doubt in my mind. And if he's around, and I don't remember, is it 78, pick 78?
78, yes.
Yeah, you know, if he's around at 78, I'm all for it. But like, he's not a guy I would take before that, like, at all. And I could, he's a guy I could 100% be wrong about, but I'm not taking the chance with him. A guy.
Anyone else of note? Go for it. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, the guy that I just absolutely adore, a guy that I don't think is getting enough conversation, and a guy that if they haven't addressed it, I would like be ecstatic to see him drafted at 87. Is CJ West, the Indiana prospect. And I know people are going to be like, Indiana, what the hell?
They were great last year.
They were. And he had a great season. just a hair over 6'1", Jess, and 316 pounds. This dude he's my Alan McNeil this year. You remember Alan McNeil came in just under 6'2" and 317 pounds out of North Carolina State a couple years ago. And then you look at what CJ did at the combine, you know, a 4.95 40. I think you can line him up on the defensive interior and just kind of let him wreak havoc, because he's that type of guy. I love this kid. If they got him in the third round, I'd be ecstatic about him.
Anyone else of note?
I think we got to mention a local product. Ty Robinson went to Higley High School. I know Boo Higley, but Jess is a Williamsfield guy, so we got to boo Higley. But Ty Robinson went to high school in Arizona, went out to Nebraska. I think, and I could be wrong. I'll double check. I think he played 5 years there. I could be wrong, though. But, you know, had a nice career and then, you know, ended up just being one of those guys that is just kind of, he's going to be a, you know, late third, early fourth type of guy. But he came in at 6'5 and 288 pounds, a 4'8, 340, really, really good jumps, solid bench press. And so the question becomes, like, where can you line him up? Can he be an interior defensive lineman type? Or is he kind of more of a, so it just depends on what you like about him. If you put him as an interior defensive lineman type, some of the things that you've, or you can comp him out to, are just like super athletic defensive linemen. So it just ends up not, you know, being like the best comps, but I really like his game. You know, probably a day three type of guy, like a round four type of guy, but he's a fun player. And somebody I thought we should at least mention, cause like I said, local guy, local ties has had really, really nice success, in college and been a guy that's had a lot of production and, you know, had a good career, despite
6 years. At Nebraska, but and what he did do at that last year is where, you know, he hit that old man, that old college man age, and guess what did right. He produced. He had right. 7 sacks and 13 tackles for loss, at when he in previous 5 years had 5 sacks and 14 tackles for loss. So the production showed up,
but it might have been worked too little back too end of the,
is he coming in kind of the back end of those COVID baby kids? But, you know, you see the production, for me, doesn't that kind of scream day three, top, you know, round four, maybe, but I mean, 7 sacks in the Big Ten, that's nothing to sneeze at exactly.
And by the way, if you want this year's Dante Stills, Aeneas Peebles out of Virginia Tech, came in just a hair over 6 feet, 6'5". 282 pounds, but excellent movement, excellent explosiveness, and a nice productive player while at Virginia Tech. Again, and Stills went 5, 6. I can't even remember off the top of my head.
He was around 6.
Yeah, so that's probably where Peebles ends up, right? Because you're talking about a guy that's a fifth-year guy. But I love the player. I love what he brings. And this is this class is so fun. I mean, we didn't talk about guys like Josh Farmer, Jordan Phillips. So
let's throw out a few day three names. Coming to Next Generation Sea Red Podcast, the best our Cardinals talk about. Let's throw out a few day three names. Cardinals have a fourth, have a fifth, have a seventh rounder. Who are some guys that you could maybe grab late and look at the gems there? That's coming to Next Generation Sea Red. Back on the Rise of Sea Red Podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. Day three guys for defensive linemen. What were you about to mention? Was it Junior Tafuna?
Yeah, I mean, Junior Tafuna out of Utah.
UCLA. Yeah, Utah. That Jay Toy is UCLA.
JJ Pegwest out of Mississippi, Ole Miss. Elijah Roberts out of SMU. Like, this is, and Jamari Caldwell out of Oregon. Like, this is a fun. Like, I can't overstate how good this class is in terms of just, you know, probably being able to find depth on top of, you know, the just sheer firepower at the top. But those day two guys, they make this class what it is. But these day three guys, and like, I wouldn't be shocked if CJ West fell in the third round. You know, he's kind of an outlier from a size standpoint, right? 6'1", 300 pounds. Tafuna is an interesting guy, 6'3", what is he, about 310, I think he came in at.
308, yes.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's had a nice career, a run stopper only, kind of, and I know it's an easy cheap comp, but kind of in the Lucky Foto mold, right? Like, not going to be a sack guy. I think he's got like 3 career sacks, but he's a guy that, I mean, Utah's defense is great every year, right?
It is. That's one of those things that if you get the guy, well, and like when the Cardinals drafted Lecky, now he's a, what was he, 340 pounds at the time? So Lecky was bigger, super athletic. They only used him as a run stopper, and the Cardinals felt that he might have some pass rushing upside. But by the time that the Jonathan Gannon got a hold of him, they're like, you're a 2-down guy. And he's still in the league. He you know, after he finished his contract with the Cardinals, he signed with the Jets. And I don't remember where he signed, but he signed a 1-year deal. I think with the Raiders for this coming year. Yeah. So he's going on year 6, and for a 4th-round pick, that's a good career.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned Elijah Roberts. He's in a really interesting one to me because Elijah Roberts was like a high-end recruit, went to Miami, didn't produce for anything, and that's not uncommon, right? Like, these guys get to these schools and they just don't produce. And then he went to SMU and he put up, I think it was 17 sacks over the last 2 years, and they were using him more all over the place. But you know, he's not big. He's good sized. He's, you know, he came in just under 6'4", 285, but man, his athletic testing was 4.78 40, 116-inch broad jump, was at 75th percentile. Like, he's an explosive dude, but the question is, like, what are you going to get out of him? A comparison that I've seen, a guy that's, you know, pestered the Cardinals, I think, for a couple years, that's good, so it's not a negative, but like, again, where do you take him? But John Franklin Myers, is that the guy? You know, you can look at him and see a guy that's been around this league for a long time. He went in the 4th round, you know, had a little stint with the Rams, and then has been with the Jets, and then just signed with Denver. But you look at what Franklin Myers has done. I mean, 2 sacks as a rookie, a 4th-round rookie. And then since then, 3, 6, 5, 3.5, 7. Like, he's a, like, if you get that in the 4th round, Jess, you're like, holy cow, that's a win, right? Like, so yeah, these guys like Roberts, Tafuna, again, it's a, what's your flavor? Like, what are you looking for in these rounds? And what do you see a role at? So, like, if you think that a guy like Elijah Roberts can rush the passer from day one and just be a rotational interior pass rusher, and you think he has more upside than Dante Stills, wouldn't that be, you know, a good sign? So those are the guys, you know, to kind of think of. And there's, again, there's this class, we're going to be talking about guys going all the way down into the 6th, 7th round, because somebody's going to get a steal and be like, and Cardinals fans are going to be like, oh, they could have drafted him. And you'll be like, yeah, but nobody did for 200 picks. And sorry. But the one I just wanted to, you know, again, I want to real quick, Deontay Walker, I like him. I don't want anybody to think I don't, right? Like, but I just, the back at that size.
I always said this. You've never heard anyone who used to have a bad back.
Right, exactly. And just at that, dude, he is so, so freaking big. Like, he's just such a big dude. Again, if you get him on day 3 and that's a risk you can take, and he ends up, and I don't mean to be speak ill of the dead to Arizona Cardinals fans, but he ends up like Rashard Lawrence, where it's just always like, oh, what could have been, right? If he was healthy, what could have been? But you had that information. And so, like, that's a gamble you take. I'm okay with it, but I'm not taking him in the first 3 rounds. Just 0% chance I want to deal with that. And if he ends up being a guy that gets picked in the 80s and goes on to be an all pro, you can be like, well, you're an idiot, Seth. And I'll agree with you 100%. But like, just the size.
Still, it's still not a risk that you want to take. That's the thing, is that those draft picks, like, sometimes you're going to choose not to pick a guy because you don't want to risk. There is too much risk, and guess what? They pay off. So, you know, the degenerates out there know sometimes there's bets that you don't take because you think it's a little on the foolish side, but they do pay out sometimes. Like when you, like that plus 800 or that plus 4,000 underdog,
right,
when that comes with it up, like you'd sure bet that, but then you're like, well, I should have. Well, who was going to do that?
Right.
Other than just throwing it out there.
Right. But also there's the stuff that like drives me nuts, Jess. And I'm guilty of it too. In January, talking about betting, I had a plus 19,000, like plus 19,000. And I bet $2.50 on it. And then you go, why didn't I just bet my paycheck on it? Right. I could have been a millionaire. Well,
you could also lost your paycheck.
Right. Exactly. Then you're like, well, then I don't have rent for the month, right? So like that's the thing. You can take chances and you take strategic chances and you say, all right, I'll bet $4 on this, and then it doesn't work out. You're like, that's $4, and then it hits and you kick yourself and you go, I should have bet $400 on it. I would have, you know. And that's the thing, is like, it's not realistic, but you know, when it's somebody else's money or when it's somebody else's job, right, you're like, Deion Walker, 6'7", 330. Who cares if he's got a bad back? They don't make guys that size. And you're like, I agree, but now, oh no. So yeah.
And that's the thing, is that when it comes to the draft, just because a player is going to be great doesn't mean he's worth the first round pick.
Right, exactly.
Because it is there's an element of risk. And so you are willing to bet this lottery ticket on this type of player. And maybe there's a lower chance one down the line who's going to be better, but that doesn't mean he should have been drafted in the first round. It just means he outperformed expectations, and right, that's okay. That's okay. That'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sierra podcast, episode 651. We will be back later in the week to talk offensive line. And I'll be honest, I feel like offensive line might be the division, the direction they go in round one. So we'll dive into the offensive line, both tackles and interior guys. Until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.